Why the decision to cut interest rates this week may be more art than science. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. What can we learn from the decision of U.S. central bankers to cut interest rates by a quarter of a percentage point? Normally, when the economy is ticking along and consumers are spending briskly, the guardians of interest rates are more inclined to raise rates, yet three of the 12 of those guardians disagreed with the decision. On Thursdays, we often call Diane Swonk, the chief economist at the tax and consulting firm Grant Thornton. Good morning.
Good morning.
So how much should we make of the fact that there were three dissenters on the 12-member committee that decides on interest rates?
Well, what was interesting about the dissenters was the spectrum of views they represented. Two wanted to hold rates the same as they were prior to the meeting, and in fact, they dissented in July as well. The third one, although he wanted a 50 basis point cut in July, he didn't vote to dissent in July, but he decided on this meeting he should vote to dissent. It's interesting that he decided to actually raise his voice a little louder at this meeting with an actual dissent. It's kind of like sort of underscoring your point or putting an explanation point. That's what Bullard did when he said, I want a 50 basis point cut, and you guys are only cutting a quarter point. And nobody does those kinds of votes in isolation. What it really underscores is the fragmentation the Fed is at this moment.
It's a reminder that this isn't like a calculus exam. There's no actual right answer here.
And it's very hard because they're trying to walk this high wire act of not stoking bubbles in the U.S. and not giving too much away at this stage of the game when they don't have a lot to give at this stage of the game, while it's simultaneously trying to hedge against the downside risks associated with weak growth abroad, trade uncertainty, and also worried about how far out of line they are with the rest of the world. That in and of itself causes financial instability abroad that could wash up on our own shores as a financial crisis coming from abroad instead of from the U.S. There is absolutely no right answer, and I think at the end of the day, it's legitimate and productive to have debate.
Always good to talk to Diane Swonk at Grant Thornton. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Stock markets open, and the Dow is up 49 points, 0.2%. The S&P 500 up 0.2%. NASDAQ up 0.4%. The benchmark 10-year interest rate is down 1.77%. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg is on Capitol Hill today, not testifying in public, but going from one lawmaker's office to another to share his views about ways big tech companies should be regulated or not regulated amid antitrust and privacy concerns. Meanwhile, Zuckerberg's outfit this week announced it's expanding the definition of what is a terrorist organization that would be banned from Facebook, some platforms with extremist content to be blocked, including the online forum 4chan, linked to mass shootings, including the one in El Paso. BBC business reporter Will Bain is following this from London. Will, Facebook says it's going to appoint, like, what, a content advisor board?
Yeah, David, it, in fact, rather loftily was kind of dubbed as a Supreme Court of Facebook, in fact. And what in reality that looks like is, as you say, a kind of oversight board. They're saying no less than 11 people when it starts out next year, no more than 40 people when it's finally fully up and running around the world. All of those outside of Facebook staff. It's meant to be a kind of final independent arbitrator on moderation decisions on the site as they try to tackle, as you say, huge issues around not only extreme content, but of course our old friend, political disinformation or fake news.
Yeah, friend in quotes. Any sense of really how independent this group will be?
That seems to be the really big question and the big pushback already. Critics pointing out that Facebook will appoint the core members of this board, and they also are questioning how binding in reality any of the decisions would be. There's no law, obviously, backing any of this up. It's just Facebook's word. Mark Zuckerberg rejects all of that. He says in an open letter, basically, look, some of these decisions are just too big and controversial for us as a company to try and tackle alone, and we need kind of expert help, which is what they're trying to recruit here. And an example that was kind of given is recently an anti-abortion video, which was deemed to contain inaccuracies by the independent fact-checking group that Facebook contracts out to do that work, was removed, only to later be reinstated after four Republican senators complained to Mr. Zuckerberg personally, accusing the site of having a bias against conservative views. So you can kind of see the bind that they're in.
So when does the board start its work?
So they're saying 2020, but herein lies another snag. A Facebook spokesman said the board would only consider dozens of cases a year. So given the volume of potentially controversial posts today, it sounds like that might be just scratching the surface.
The BBC's Will Bain. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Marketplace helps you stay sharp on crucial matters related to business, the economy, and money. And to help you do some numbers of your own, you can get your very own Marketplace Pencil Pack when you become a Marketplace investor today. It's a set of six pencils, each stamped with a favorite Marketplace quote, yours for a donation of just $5 a month. Support public service journalism and get your pencil pack today at marketplace.org. And thank you. The iPhone 11 is not the only big smartphone launch of the month. The new pitch happened in Munich today, where the number two seller of smartphones unveiled its next big thing. It's from Huawei of China, the firm under U.S. government sanctions. This means the Huawei phone will be missing some U.S. technology. Here's Marketplace's Scott Tong.
There's a lot of buzz about Huawei's Mate 30 Pro, its screen display curving around the edges and its world-beating camera. But just as important is what's not in it. Huawei has confirmed to us that the Mate 30 will include Android software, which is open source, but no Google apps. Google Maps, Gmail, Google Search, Google Drive, YouTube, none of those. Because Huawei is on the U.S. blacklist for allegedly being a national security risk, and so buying Google products to put on its new phone would violate those sanctions. Now, this won't matter in the China market, where Huawei is king and Google services aren't offered anyway. But Europe is the problem. Huawei is the number two phone brand there, behind Samsung, and it was leapfrogging all the competition, including iPhone, until Washington got suspicious. So now analysts say it will be a huge challenge to lure European customers who, like most Americans, are addicted to the Google apps.
That there is Marketplace's Scott Tong. Thank you. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio. This is the Marketplace Morning Report from APM. American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.